Happy to have with us now Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. He's covered this Browns team for a long time. How many years have you been on this beat?
I started on the beat in 04.
Okay.
So 8 full years.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good run so far. All right. Well, good. Well, the offseason, obviously, Scott, in terms of what we just heard from Dick Geron a little bit earlier, I want to start there because the foundation of this team, the success that this team had in 2011, whatever you could call success, and it wasn't much in the certainly in the way of wins, losses, but in terms of a part of the team that maybe has some traction going forward, sustainability, mm-hmm. is the defensive side. And his first year, from that standpoint, was reasonably successful.
Yeah, I thought Coach Geron really stabilized that defense. He was a different personality than his predecessor, Rob Ryan. He brought in the 4-3, and I was worried that there'd be a big period of transition going from 3-4 to 4-3,
right.
But I didn't really think there was, and I thought he kind of settled it down. He played a not conservative game plan, but there wasn't a whole lot of risks taken, and I thought overall the defense played well, and the pass defense especially, you know, was in the top five most of the year.
Yeah, and overall a top 10 or a 10th, mm-hmm. you know, ranked defense in the league in a division where there are outstanding defenses.
Yes.
I mean, that was the definition of the AFC North. But you mentioned about this transition, and I said the same thing, how difficult it figured to be to try to get guys to buy into and be comfortable in a 4-3 when many of them had been 3-4 players. Why do you think it worked as well as it did?
Yeah, you know, I think you have to go to the linebackers. Scott Fujita and Chris Gokong had spent time in the 4-3 elsewhere. And then Taquell Jackson hadn't, but everybody said he was perfectly suited for it in the middle, and it turned out that he was. So I think once you have those three guys in the heart of that defense, the secondary doesn't change that much.
Right.
And then you drafted two rookies who were 4-3 fits already.
Right.
So I think it just was kind of worked out naturally.
Because he had to do this, Geron and the coaching staff, they had to do this despite obviously not having that time to work,
yeah.
No offseason. And when you put it all together, I mean, watching training camp, and you and I were out there pretty much every day, mm-hmm. you could see that there was a lot of teaching going on the field. Not that that isn't normal for camp, but
sure.
I thought there was a higher level of that, a lot of pauses in drills where that teaching was taking place by Geron and the other assistants.
Yeah, but by the time you got to September, there weren't the real gaffes. You know, I mean, you could point to specific situations where the defense got burned or whatever, but I didn't feel that they were out of step, out of place. I didn't think there was a lot of confusion at all from the defense, which is probably attributed to the coaching and the veterans like Scott Fujita,
yeah.
and Chris Gokong.
The leaders that were out there. And you mentioned those coaches, and Dick Geron speaks so highly of them, but on this show, earlier in this show, really expressed a sense of gratitude for how well this group worked. Dwayne Board with the defensive line, Billy Davis with the linebackers, and he talked about Jerome Henderson, mm-hmm. with the secondary, who's no longer here with the Cowboys now, being replaced by Tim Houck, but that he had this good group of coaches that could help him. And you've got a veteran like Ray Rhodes,
yep.
in the building, which is another voice and presence that's helpful. But overall, he gives a lot of credit to those position coaches and the work they did.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that shows up. Dwayne Board, you know, when you take the two rookies, and Phil Taylor and Jabal Sheard, both of whom had, I don't know if outstanding is the right word, but they had really good years
really
for rookies.
Strong, yeah,
yeah, really strong years. So that's a credit to him. Billy Davis, I tell you, he's an impressive guy. You know, he spent time as a coordinator before, and you could tell he's from a football family. But when you meet him, he just has that personality that makes you want to play for him. And then the guys have always raved about Jerome Henderson. You know, I ran into Joe Hayden a couple weeks ago at that Sports Awards, and he was talking about, you know, how they'll miss him. He's sure they got the right guy to come in. But I know the guys like playing for Jerome Henderson, and he had a positive energy about him. He's always running sprints out there in practice with the guys.
Yeah.
Kind of a young, you know, had a young look to him that I think carried over to the young secondary.
Yeah, former player, and,
yeah.
and as is Tim Houck. But, I mean, I think that credibility level that a former player brings to the table is also a key to getting these guys to buy in and to connect. Scott Petrick is joining us from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram, covers the Browns. Little off-season chat with him. And more on this defensive side of the ball. We mentioned the young players. We mentioned Jabal Sheard and Phil Taylor on that defensive line. The needle, the arrow can only be pointing up for these guys. I know you say that, and some people have that fear. Well, then there's the sophomore slump or whatever. But let's talk about Sheard in particular. He looks to me like a guy just getting started on what could be a very special career.
No, I think you're right. And if you looked, once they moved into the left side of the defense, where he's going against a right tackle, you could tell that he felt way more comfortable because that's where he'd been at Pitt. And, you know, what impressed me most is the big plays, the forced fumbles, the strip sacks, and those are what you need to change the games. Because the Browns didn't get a lot of interceptions last year, so they relied on those kind of things. And you could tell every game he was getting more comfortable. I didn't think the game was ever too big for him. So, I expect big things from him from here on out.
He plays with a level of speed and aggressiveness, too. That you have that or you don't.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
He comes blessed with that. Certainly, you know, there's the thinking aspect of it and being in the right position. What I like about the guy, though, is that he's almost always in the vicinity of the ball. And when he's getting pressure on the quarterback, it isn't just that he's going to get pressure on the quarterback. He's going to separate him from the football.
Yes, definitely. And I also thought he made strides in the run game. I thought early in the year teams were going after him a little bit, and then that stopped. They were no longer gashing his side of the line, and I thought he was stout at the point of attack.
Phil Taylor played well at that tackle position, lined up next to Ataba Rubin. Were you impressed with how he sort of showed, at least to me, at a point where he might have been, I don't want to say hitting a rookie wall, but slowing down, maybe not as consistently effective as he was earlier, seemed to pick it up a little bit later in the year?
He did. I thought there was a lull, and I think Dick Duran did tell us.
Right.
That, I don't know if it was about week 9 or 10, he thought Phil had the worst game of the year to that point. And after that, I thought they were all better.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to Phil Taylor, and it speaks to Ataba Rubin next to him, who's always working hard. And I think he rubbed off on Phil some, and Phil would say that. So it was good to see him run into that wall and then gather himself and then go through the wall. Because I thought you saw him play his best football toward the end of the season. And I think the jump for him from year one to year two will be huge.
And toward the end of the season, it's not coincidental, it's when we saw the better run play, play, right? I mean, that was something statistically lacking all year. You can't make a case that this was even a good run defense team overall. But in that last quarter of the season, it seemed to consistently be better at stopping the run when this team was facing, obviously, each week an outstanding running back.
Yeah, and I thought they made strides. After they got gashed by Ray Rice in Baltimore in the first game here, they made strides, and they were obvious in the rematch in Baltimore. The run defense played way better. They played better against Pittsburgh in the rematch. So I think Phil Taylor had a big, had a lot to do with that, and that's why they drafted him. They drafted him to pair him next to Rubin and finally kind of stop the holes in the running game, because the run defense has been bad for a decade here.
I feel that Ataba Rubin just didn't get enough credit outside of Cleveland. We all knew. We saw him all year long. Week after week, we talk about what a great player he was. I know on this round table and listening to, Jimmy Donovan and Doug Deacon and Tom Withers talk about it and yourself, that we praised him. And then when I, look around the internet and talk with other people around the country and bring him up, really only – some of the national broadcasters who had network broadcasters who had Brown assigned to Browns games would really appreciate what we knew. But nationwide, I don't think it was as respected as it should have been.
No, you're 100% right. He's got to be on the list of most underrated guys in the league. And I think if you look at the contract he signed in the middle of the season, it proves his value across the league. Because the Browns wanted to keep him, and they paid him a bunch of money to stay, which just would have shown what his market value would be across the league. Because you can't find those 330-pound guys that have a nonstop motor, and he does. And if you've watched him, the most impressive thing about him is when he's chasing running backs down the field, 20 yards down the field on the sideline, and he's making a tackle. And guys that big don't do that.
The secondary, when we talk about, of course, we start that conversation about that area, that position, we talk about Joe Hayden, and still among, I think, the very better cornerbacks in the NFL. His season in 2011, not as strong as 2010, at least in terms of numbers or production, for interception production. But I thought he was an effective player by, you know, for the most part. I thought he too probably had the biggest transition to make from the new coverage scheme that required man to man versus the zone work and the zone that he did under Rob Ryan previous year, and that zone coverage, I'll put him in position to make more plays, more interceptions than he did in man-to-man.
Yeah, I think that's huge, Vic. And I don't know if the average fan picks up on that. You know, you're watching TV and they're not the camera doesn't focus on guys on one-and-one, right? Yeah. They're all looking at the quarterback. And that was a huge adjustment. And I talked to Sheldon Brown, the other corner, a lot, and I talked to Joe about it. And they were in man-to-man like 90% of the time is what they would tell you. Mm-hmm. And it takes away the interception opportunities because you don't have your eyes on the quarterback. And it's difficult because if you get beat, you know, if you lose your footing for a second, the guy's gone and you're giving up a big touchdown.
Right.
So it was a huge adjustment for these guys. And I think that's why it's tough to judge Joe Hayden's year just looking at the numbers, because that's a huge difference from rookie year to year two. So the interceptions go down. But then they made him their number one corner, and he followed the other team's best receiver everywhere he went. And he didn't do that as a rookie. No. So that's another huge transition he had to make.
Right. And T.J. Ward's story, sad just because he got hurt and missed most of the year. But and I think that's where it really showed up for him in the lack of run defense, the support that he brings to it. So when the run defense struggled for much of the season, you can point to his absence as being a big part of that. I wonder from your standpoint now with Tim Houck taking over as the new secondary coach, how having a fully healthy Ward for a whole season, what that could mean if we presume that's the case, and B, what Houck's influence as the hard-hitting former DB that he was, that kind of plays right into to Ward's playing style.
Yeah, well, you know that's the kind of guy TJ likes because he loves to talk about it. You know, there's a commercial around town for a car dealership where he knocks out the sales manager or whoever. So I think TJ will embrace that. It was a sad way to see him end the year because I thought he'd been playing well. And for a big hitter, he got better in coverage.
Yeah.
Tight ends didn't get to him. Even week one, I thought he had a bad week against Cincinnati's Jermaine Gresham. In week two, he played better against Dallas Clark. And you saw that progression throughout the season, I thought. In run defense, he is a pivotal person, you know, when they play eight in the box. And I talked to him after that San Francisco game, and they gave up a bunch of yards early,
right?
And he took it upon himself, not filling the right gap. And then by the second half, he was in the right gap. And Frank Gore didn't have the same success. So he's got to be included when you talk run defense.
And as far as the rest of the secondary, Usama Young came in and I guess did some things. We brought it. Maybe it wasn't a big splash, but at least it was sufficient at times. And you look at Mike Adams, the veteran, who was at least a solid, steady presence while he was in there and played well, I think, for the most part while he was in there. But the safety position, by and large, needing those people to really step up. And again, I don't know if you could call it exceptional, but for what the Browns needed, it at least got the job done.
Yeah, you know, Mike Adams led the team in interceptions. He's going to be free agent, so it'll be interesting to see if they target him and try to bring him back. I think he's 30, 31. They paid Usama Young, was one of the few free agents they brought in last year, so I know they expect him to be a starter, and he was toward the end of that year, but more of that was filling in for TJ at strong safety rather than the free position. So, you know, I thought those two guys played adequate. You know, Mike Adams, I thought it was commendable that they brought in Usama Young to take his job, and he wouldn't let him do it.
Yeah.
And that says something. You know, the guy, he's not big. He's an undrafted guy to Delaware, but he's got a lot of fight in him, and he's a great special teams player.
Yeah. And Eric Hag, Buster Skrine,
you saw a little bit
younger
from Eric
players. You saw
Eric
a little bit from those guys, too.
Yeah, and I like Buster. Buster could be the fastest guy on the team. I'm not sure he's ready to be a starter, but next year he might be able to be that nickel guy if that's how the Browns decide they want to go. And trust him to be the third guy, because that's what they started to do at the end of the year. They'd rest Sheldon Brown some, and Buster was a third guy. And he showed a willingness to fight out there against, I think it was Miami, he was on the field for the last drive to try to stop Miami from scoring, and he made a pass breakup down the sideline.
All right. When we come back, let's talk more about what is ahead for this football team, the next big event being the Combine in Indianapolis. which is starts next week, and we will you and I know will both be there. So we'll get into some of that as we continue with our discussion with Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram, covers the Browns on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford and brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game. And we're back with the second half of our discussion with Scott Petrick. He covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. We covered the defense, I think, pretty thoroughly, although we can get into maybe some of the with this segment. I'd like to look ahead as to what this team can do to make itself better on both sides of the ball. And the next big phase of that will take place in Indianapolis next week at the Combine. We'll both be there. And as we think about that and how the Browns approach that, everybody's thought process on this team logically is about making the offense better, because that's where this team struggled the most last year. And it could, and you know, the obvious positions that we hear about: quarterback, wide receiver, running back, offensive line, running back. But the defense shouldn't be and can't be forgotten this process, as much as it was addressed so heavily the last two drafts.
No, you're right. I'd be surprised if general manager Tom Hackert spent his first two picks on defense again, like he has his first two drafts here. But I would not be surprised at all if the number four pick was a defensive guy, or if they traded down a little bit and took a defensive guy there. You know, there's still needs. I think you need a corner opposite Joe Hayden. You know, Sheldon Brown's getting up there in age. You know, I think if you added another defensive end to pair with Jabal Sheard, all of a sudden you have four studs across the defensive line. And we saw what the Giants did to win the Super Bowl. And I'll tell you what, if you have a quarterback and a front four that can get to the passer, you can play with anybody. And it's a pretty good recipe. And then maybe, you know, one more linebacker, assuming they bring back DeQuell Jackson, maybe add an outside linebacker to put into the mix, a young guy, an athletic guy who might be able to get to the passer. So I think there's needs there. And it, you know, maybe you address through free agency, but I think they would probably go younger and look draft to fill some of those spots.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about what the Giants did in that Super Bowl, and really for a Super Bowl that was just all about the quarterbacks, all about how Tom Brady and Eli Manning were going to light it up, really that Giants defense kept, and as impressive as Brady was taking the Patriots out of that early hole, that Giants pass rush did its job. It did exactly what it was supposed to do to help them win a very close ballgame.
Oh, it sure did. You know, it started early with their safety. You know, Justin Tuck kind of forced that safety. And I thought there was a lull from the front four in the middle of the game. And then when they needed him in the fourth quarter to get a couple big stops, they got the pressure they needed. And they're doing it with big-name guys on that front four, and they do it with four, five, six of those guys.
So that's what, you know, and I'm a copycat league. I mean, that's exactly the type of thing that the Browns – I'm not saying they can duplicate that in maybe in 1 year, but if you step that up, if you add to that mix and get a bookend to Sheard, you've got yourself something that can make this team significantly better, at least noticeably better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think – if you go under season with four guys you'd love across the front four, that's a perfect place to start. You can do a whole lot. You can do a whole lot of stuff with the back seven. You can drop coverage. You know, you can cover some guys in the secondary if you need to. I think if you're building a team, quarterback, D-line are probably the two places I would start.
I want a nickel, at least, for every fan who, you know, writes into this show via social media, probably writes into you, and asks about RG3,
sure,
and, you know, the quarterback position, and how are they going to go about this, or are they going to look at Matt Flynn in free agency, on and on and on. So the quarterback talk, when we get to Indianapolis, is going to be front and center, is going to be a very huge, huge topic of conversation. And I guess it'll be interesting. I know we're not going to get any real clues as to, okay, this is who the Browns like, or this is what the Browns see among these guys. But it's still going to be something that is going to be talked about quite a bit, about Robert Griffin III, and about Andrew Luck. And just the hordes, the media hordes that'll be crowded around those guys when we're there.
Oh, man, I'm flashing back to last year and Cam Newton.
I know.
You know, you're right.
10 deep.
Oh, my, it was crazy. Deep. Yeah. I was 50 feet away trying to listen. But, yeah, you know, it'll be the first time. I don't think Tom Hecker's going to tell us any secrets, but it's the first time he can kind of talk freely about these guys, because they're all, you know, they've declared themselves for the draft, and they're going to be on display and interviewed and stuff. So I look forward to that. And, you know, what I like about the Combine is just being able to see these guys up close. You get a sense of how big they are.
Right.
You know, because you don't get that necessarily on TV, but if you stand next to RG3, I'll be able to tell if he's 6'1 or 6'2, in addition to the actual, you know, they measure him there.
Yeah.
But you get a feel for, is he big enough? Does he look frail? And then you get to hear the interviews, and I know these guys are coached, but their personality still comes through.
Oh, yeah.
And you can tell if the guy's, you know, a little bit of a knucklehead or if he's grounded. I definitely think I can tell that from talking to him for 5-10 minutes.
Sure.
And it's not just the huge guys, but, you know, the other names, you talk to a guy and you think. Yeah. And, you know, I remember Cam Newton, and I was not impressed by the way he handled the media last year. And he must have done better in his interviews with Carolina, and then, you know, obviously he had a good rookie year. But I think those leave a lasting impression on me, but I think they're also on the team. When these coaches meet with these guys, it's the first time they're making an impression whether or not I can trust this guy to be my guy.
Yeah, you're right. And to a lesser extent, I mean, we're doing the media interview versus, say, the team interview with the players, and those will go on, and I think teams can pick upwards of I'm pretty sure there's a limit, but I think I've heard numbers of in the 40s of players that they realistically can get in the course of the time that the team representatives are there, 15 minutes apiece.
Right.
I don't know how much you get to know about a guy in 15 minutes, but it's 15 minutes more than you have previously. And for our purposes, like you said, at those risers in behind the mics with a lot of media nationally in front of them, bombarding them with various questions about their backgrounds and such. It will be fascinating and does tell us a lot. And I guess the other thing we're going to look at is listen to, say, every word that you hear from the Browns folks with regard to their observations. And nobody will show they're pretty good at keeping those cards close to the chest. All team reps are, but you know everybody's ready to just jump on one utterance that can give you a clue.
No, I mean, that's what it is, and you'd be or the fans would be surprised how many media are just at this. You know, it's the inside of the dome, and it's a million people talk. You know, it's thousands of people talking to these college guys, and there's 20 of them at a time, and they're spread across the room, and you're looking for stories, and then you're talking to front office types to see, get any inkling of who they like or what they don't like. Then you throw the Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, Indianapolis factor. It's just going to be like the Super Bowl redux because you're going to get all the same stuff, and Andrew Luck will be in the spotlight. So I'm really looking forward to getting up there.
Yeah, I think it's going to, you know, take the off-season talk to another level. It's been obviously a fairly quiet offseason since the last we heard from everybody, which was those postseason wrap-up news conferences by Pat Shurmur, by Mike Holmgren, by Tom Heckert. So I think as we get closer to the combine, we'll start getting more of a feel for what the draft looks like and now that you have the underclassmen in there. And I think from that point forward, as you say, fans will appreciate this, is pretty much on a daily basis we'll be hammering away at who the prospects are.
Well, that's true. Because, you know, for just so long, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And there's no news. And, you know, I'm sure Tom Heckert and his guys are sequestered somewhere watching film. And all of a sudden, they become public again.
Yeah.
And then you get, you know, that's about the time where you start talking to your own free agents, so we could have, you know, DeQuell Jackson news or Peyton Hillis news, because that's about the time it starts. And then, you know, it's only a week or so after the combine, you get franchise tags and then full-on free agency.
Yeah.
And then we're a go. You know, next thing you know, it's the draft. So really, I mean, I know it's the offseason, but it starts to heat up pretty good here.
I think it's going to heat up quite a bit, and looking forward to it. Scott, thanks so much for stopping by.
Anytime, Vic.
He is Scott Petrick, covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford. It's brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game.